And news with Nick. September 28th, 2017, here in the morning. The chat says, where is Nick? And the camera is pointed at me. So I'm not sure what you're talking about. We are here. If you're checking out the video version of the show, you will see our intro image today is a image that's trending on Reddit. It's a very hilarious picture of Kim Jong-un, but if he was skinny, and he looks way eviler. It's very funny. It's like a brain trick that happens. So you look at Kim Jong-un fat, and you go, ah, Kim Jong-un, he's got so many nukes, he's going to kill us all. Ah, that's pretty funny. Yeah, right. And then you look at Kim Jong-un skinny with a chin and chin bones and stuff like that. And you go, oh my goodness, he's evil and he's got nukes and he's going to kill us all. I'm very scared. But that doesn't make any sense. It's not like he's going to be able to run quicker to the nuke button and then that's going to affect everyone, right? I guess a skinny man just portrays more evil because you feel like, well, if he's got so much power to avoid donuts, he must have so much power to be gathering up an army of minions in order to send over the seas. Anyway, very cool. I don't know how you would find this if you're not looking at the video version. Maybe Google image search Kim Jong-un fat photoshopped skinny or Kim Jong-un photoshopped skinny. I bet you it won't even come up because it's such a new pick. Like someone just made this and posted it. Well, anyway, everything's coming through. I'm still on the cam, right? I'm not like see-through, Casey, whatever your name is. Espresso D says, you used to have more chins, Brian. Ooh, is that Brian Sovereign, the tricep man, complimenting my fewer chins? All right. Again, news with Nick. So, breaking news this morning. Hugh Hefner has sucked his last lollipop or whatever he does. Hefner founded Playboy in 1953 with $600, and he is now dead. I don't know if there's any news about that. Was he in the hospital or something? Let's see. I was going to say, where's his neck? I've heard so much about LO. Oh, have you never seen me? Casey Hibden. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you be in the why would you be seeing me for the first time? You've never seen a live video version before or any version of the video of the show? So Hefner, not alive anymore. I'm not sure what he was doing. Probably just limping around his house with his walker going, oh, remember when I was cool? Me neither. I don't remember anything. Well, anyway, here I am. It's obvious I haven't been on the regular show for a bit. Everything's fine. There's nothing to get into. It's just like I basically said, hey, you guys want to talk about cars? You guys want to go over the 45-minute half limit? It drives me insane. That's great. You guys should do that. And I feel much happier that I don't have to stress about the show. So, for example, if I go do something on a Saturday, it's like, well, oh, my God, I have to do this thing. But then after this, there's a show we got to sit through for 3 hours, and I'm going to be very tired. I got to drive home, blah, blah, blah. Everything's good. I'm good monologuing onto my own news show. Oh, no. Espresso D says, search YouTube for reciting the Monopoly board in order. That's so you can see my fatter neck. Oh, boy. I should rip that video off the internet right now. Okay. There's also the video saying, what is it? Saying, yeah, right, forward, and backwards. Okay. Anthony Weiner sentenced to 21 months in prison. Anthony Weiner sentenced to 21 months in prison for exchanging sexually explicit messages with a 15-year-old girl, capping the spectacular fall of the former congressman whose self-destructive behavior wrecked his career and marriage and played a role in the final days of the 2016 presidential campaign. The crime I committed was my rock bottom, a tearful Weiner told U.S. Judge Denise Cote. He was ordered to surrender to prison on November 6th. That's over a month away. So it's like, you gotta go to jail. But you can go home and, like, feed the dog first. That's weird, right? I guess that happens, but it seems like it happens more often to famous peeps. Wiener pleaded guilty in May to one count of transmitting obscene material to a high school girl in North Carolina. An FBI investigation into Wiener's explicit messages turned up emails that had been sent to his wife, Huma Abedin, then a top aide to Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Duff. That prompted the FBI to reopen its investigation into Hillary's use of private email server while serving as Secretary of State. This is a serious crime that deserves serious punishment, Coates said as she handed down the sentence. She was a minor. She was a victim. She's entitled to the law's full protection. Wiener broke down weeping, covering his face with his hand as Coates delivered the sentence before a packed courtroom in Lower Manhattan. I feel like 21 months is not that bad. Even if he serves the full thing, which he might not, that's less than 2 years for literally sexting with a toddler. The former congressman asked a girl who he knew to be 15-year-old to display her naked body and exchange his sexually explicit behavior with him online. Wiener admitted to asking the girl to undress and touch herself. Blah, blah, blah. Wiener, who faced as long as 10 years, asked Coates to sentence him to probation. His lawyer said, okay, so he's going to jail. And I don't know if you guys remember what he wrote. So he had this whole sexting conversation with her. And so he said things like, "You can tell me anything," she wrote back. I like to feel that. Literally no one I feel that is true about. Man, they are really... Oh, wait a minute. Hang on. Oh, no, he's on the left. He doesn't know how to type words. He says, "Is like to feel that literally no one that I feel that is true about." And she writes back, "What? That was worded weirdly. And he says, "I want to feel like I can tell you anything." Wait a minute. Who's what in this? Is there something that I can do to... Yeah, I think she's on the right. So anyway, and there's more text. So he says, I would bust that tight pussy. Oh, I would bust that tight pussy so hard and so often that you would leak and limp for a week. And then he sent a picture of himself, and some of it's blurred out. So I can assume it's his naked chest, which is way too explicit for this news article. In the online messages, Wiener sent bare-chested photos of himself to the underage girl, repeatedly called her baby and complimented her body, and told her that he woke up hard after thinking about her, according to copies of the conversations. When confronted with the claims, Wiener did not deny exchanging flirtatious messages with the teens. He declined to comment on the specifics of the allegations on the record, but provided copies of two emails the girl sent him that he contends raise questions about her claims. So, that's that. He's going to jail, but not until November 6th, though. He can go home and maybe he could flee the country. Next story. Teen from Chicago found dead in walk-in freezer. Kinesha Jenkins was discovered after an hour-long search and pronounced dead at 12:48 a.m. Sunday, according to the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. Jenkins' mother, Teresa, said police told her Jenkins apparently let herself into the freezer while inebriated and died inside. If you guys heard about Kinesha Jenkins, for some reason, we all care about this girl who got drunk in a hotel and walked into a freezer. Let me see if I can find the video. So a video released from Rosemont Police Friday depicts Kinesha Jenkins. Oh, sorry, Kineka. There's no S in it. Staggering alone through a deserted hotel kitchen and disappearing around a corner. Last time she's seen alive. Though it doesn't capture her entering the walk-in freezer where her body was found, video taken by what appears to be a motion-activated camera shows that no one else came into the area until her body was found. Village officials released the video after days of speculation about the death of the 19-year-old Chicago woman and pressure by community activists dissatisfied in the investigation. So some of these people are like, oh my goodness, it was a black girl and she was found dead in the freezer. I bet you the cops dragged her in there and killed her and then put her in the freezer for use later in tacos. Attorneys who represented Jenkins' family said at a news conference Friday that they will conduct their own investigation and perhaps seek a second autopsy. The hotel never checked. They never searched. They never did anything while a young 19-year-old disoriented girl was sitting in their freezer. Now there has to be an answer on how that happened. I wonder how... So wait. She was found dead on... At like... Almost 1 a.m. Yeah. After an hours-long search. So if you get drunk, when's the earliest you could get drunk? Like 6 p.m. maybe. Right? You wander to the freezer. You pass out. Oh, the same, which appears to be motion out. Next picked up activity at 8:34 p.m. Ooh. What time did it say that she got spotted on the video originally? I don't see it saying that. That's weird. Well, anyway, so it couldn't have been more than like 8 hours. You die in 8 hours walking into a freezer if you're drunk? We don't even know what happened. So weird. But it's a whole bunch of people that are real upset about this. They want to make something out of maybe nothing, but maybe there is something.
Calm down.
Protesters are rallying outside the hotel.
You gotta understand right
where
now.
Where Kaneka Jenkins was found dead in a walk-in freezer.
We give you guys numerous times. I want them to stay out of the street, and this will go, and this will be fine. So here's the deal. If you guys aren't following our rules.
That's just a cop talking to a black protester. He seems very reasonable. Listen, guys, you got to not be in the streets. Espresso D says, I like my girls like I like my coffee. Blackened in the freezer. Casey says, okay, saw the Monopoly vid. Major improvement in the neck department, LOL. Thank you. Ooh, here's the video. So she's walking down a hallway. Oh, she bounced off a wall. Okay. She's holding on to the wall, going around a corner. Oh, she hits. Oh, wow. Nice catch. So she bounces off a stairwell railing, but then almost falls and then catches herself the last moment. If I make this big, how does the chat see it? That's pretty cool. So she's just randomly walking around a hallway. Is that what you do when you're drunk, I guess? She comes down the same hallway again. Doesn't appear to be going anywhere. Skip ahead. Oh, now she's in the kitchen. I gotta get me some ice cream. Maybe it's in this freezer. Oh, no, just death is there. Hello, I am death. What if the Grim Reaper was just in there eating ice cream using his big pick? And he's like, uh-oh, well... Caught me. The mother went live on Facebook. Ooh, sorry, this video could not be played. Well, oh well, she went on Facebook and said, stop protesting. There's nothing we can do. I did see a video yesterday about a guy who he found he was in the wrong house, basically. And he was drunk, and the guy who owned the house like woke him up and said, hello, you're in the wrong house. Do you guys want to see that? No, didn't think so. And the kid goes, oh, I was drunk, and I used to live here. Sorry about that. He just walks out. So I guess you do walk into random doors when you're drunk. On September 15th, 2017, at around 8:20 a.m., BST... That must be bombing standard time. an explosion occurred on a District Line train at the Parsons Green Tube Station in London, England. 30 people were treated in hospital or an urgent care center, mostly for burn injuries. The incident is being treated by the police as a terrorist attack. A homemade bomb partially exploded on an eastbound District Line train at the Parsons Green Tube Station in West London. The District Line train was packed with commuters and school children. Witnesses described seeing a fireball in the rear carriage of the packed rush hour train. Numerous passengers were reported to have suffered flash burns. Ah! It's like when you're at a wedding and you're getting your picture taken. It's like, oh, flash burn! Others received crash injuries in the rush to leave the scene. 30 people received medical treatments for their injuries, 19 of whom were taken to the hospital by ambulance, and the remainder self-presenting at hospital. In London, they call the hospital, hospital. It's like, I'm going, you don't say, I'm going to the hospital. You say, I'm going to hospital, which I guess is good, because when you're going to hospital, you want to save as much time as possible. So getting rid of the word the has probably saved thousands and thousands of hours off of people's commute to hospital, and thereby save several lives. The device had been left in a white plastic bucket inside a shopping bag. Wires were hanging out, as well as a black towel. Reports also indicate the device had a timer attached and was packed with knives and screws. According to Ben Wallace, the security minister, the bomb contained the Tyropex explosive? TATP. Same explosive used in the 2015 London bombings. So that's a pretty popular bombing device. So a guy goes to Home Depot, packs one of those white buckets full of screws, and bikes it on over to the train station and blows it up and kills nobody. Any information in this video? Police arrested an 18-year-old man Saturday morning in the port area of Dover in connection with the attack a day earlier on a train in the London Underground station. It was a significant arrest as the investigation continues. So I'm trying to find some information on the actual bomb. Oh yeah, here we go. The teenage suspect made a bucket bomb packed with shrapnel screw and knives and built it with ingredients he bought on Amazon, court heard today. The Iraqi asylum seeker, Ahmed Hassan, with 18, was motivated to unleash murder on the tube because of his warped political views, it is alleged. He entered the country illegally in 2015, put in foster care, but before the terror attack he had expressed hatred for the UK government and society. Hassan is accused of attempting to murder people traveling on the District Line train last Friday and leaving a homemade bucket bomb by the doors and appeared at the Westminster Magistrate Court. So, how did they catch him so quick? That is the question. But here's a picture of the bucket. It's in a bag, and it's just kind of on fire. Like, who got a picture of this? I guess the police could go in after it already exploded and take a picture. I feel like in America, they just send in a little robot. Maybe the robot got the picture. The device failed to properly detonate because it was poorly made, leaving around 30 people with burns, having triggered the explosion using a timer. All right. Okay. Extensive to catch him. Extensive CCTV coverage was identified by the police, spanning a period in the hours before and after the explosive device went off. So, closed-circuit TV. Is it closed-circuit if it's a public camera? But anyway, it's a security camera. And they show the suspect carrying the device, consistent with being the IED, in a bag from his home address to the train, onto which it was placed right before he got off, leaving it behind to explode. Items were then found in searches of his home consistent with him having constructed that device at the address. I don't know how they identified him, but they just looked at the cameras and they basically saw a guy walking into the train station with the bucket, walking out. Here's a video of his house. Without the bucket, And they're like, oh, that must have been the guy. So people say, hey, London, they're spying on everyone with these street cameras. I can't believe it. Big Brother. But they did catch the bomber, unless this is a scam and he's just a patsy, right, for the government bombing. Like, how would they identify him so quick? He's a plant. They gave a guy a bucket and told him, hey, walk into the train station with this, and then we'll use this as evidence for you having bombed the entire train station. They actually arrested a couple other people. However, British police have released all but one of the seven suspects they arrested over the recent attack in the London subway train bombing. Three men were released Tuesday. They face no further police action. The only person still in custody is the 18-year-old Ahmad Hassan. Can you imagine being one of the other people? Like, the police come to your work. Maybe your name is also Ahmad. And they go, Ahmad, cut over here. You're under arrest for that train bombing. And you're like, wait, I didn't do anything. I had nothing to do with it. And they'll be like, well, it's okay. We can arrest you anyway, and then we'll find out that later. So they release you. You go back to work, right? And they're like, oh, my God, Ahmad, you're back. Oh, my Allah, I guess. How did you get out of jail? And you go, I didn't even do anything, just like I said. They didn't believe me at first, and now they do. But still, you got arrested for the bombing? That's crazy. I'm under investigation for a terrorist attack. So speaking of getting skinny, I did race the Clarence. Sorry, not the Clarence DeMar. So there's the Clarence DeMar Marathon. I ran that last year. And then there's the DeMar Half Marathon. So they only use half the guy's name because it's only a half marathon. And everyone in this town was freaking out on, like, coming up to the race day. Because it is September now. It's the end of September. You're supposed to be cold. It's supposed to be, like, 40s in the morning. And the schedule was saying it's going to be 70 in the morning or whatever, and 88 at noon or 1. And people are still running a marathon at that time if they're a slowpoke. And people were like, oh, people are going to die. We're going to have heat stroke left and right. So they had an emergency meeting with the ambulance drivers of town. And they're like, what do we do? What do we do? And so they moved up the start from 8 a.m. to 7 a.m. for the full marathon. So now people are starting in much colder temperatures. Well, not much colder temperatures, but it's going to be another hour before it gets super duper hot. And then they also said, hey, if you live on the marathon route, can you please turn your hose on and set your sprinkler up and point it toward the road? And also, if you're a kid, please set up a table with little Dixie cups of water and hand them off to people. We do not want anyone heat stroking, right? So I ran the half marathon, which started at 8 still. So that was fine. Let's see. Anything about the start that's worth noting? No. I start, boom, first 2 miles. I am actually sticking behind this other guy. I remember him because he had these bright green leg stockings. Compression sleeves, whatever you call them. But I could tell by the way he was running, he was like, slow down a little bit. If I would pass him, he would like zoom ahead. But we were going 6:30s, like 6-minute 30-second, 6-minute 35-second miles. And he was keeping up with me. He was right in front of me for 2 miles. But the way he was running, I was like, I don't think this guy's got it. I think he's outdoing himself because he's changing pace a lot. And turns out I was right. He ended up coming in at the end of the race in an average of 7-minute 30-second miles. So imagine you were doing the first 2 miles in 2:30s, and then you average 7:30s. That's a lot. Sorry, 2:30s, 6:30s. And then you finish in 7:30s. That's a lot of time to lose in the last 11 miles, but whatever. I ended up coming in sixth overall out of like 300, fourth out of men, and then they wrote me up in the paper or whatever. I don't know what it looked like, but I guess the results were kind of obvious. So anyone reading the paper saw it. I got an email from some other guy at another company we work with, and he's like, hey, Nick, saw your result. Congrats. I'm like, thank you. So that was pretty cool. I stuck around at the end of the marathon to see how many people would have to go to the medical tent. So some guy I know from Run Club, K, Kevin comes across the line in 4 hours or whatever. He's like, hey, Nick, give me a high five. I'm like, wow, you should go to medical. You are slurring your words. And he's like, I know I am. His wife made him go to medical. That was cool. Hey, did you, sorry. Have you seen these posts on Facebook that are like, what is Jack yelling about in the Titanic? Or it's a picture of three pedals in a car, the clutch, the brake, and the gas, and it goes, what is this third pedal for? Wrong answers only. So they post something that's really obvious, and then they go, wrong answers only, so you make a funny joke. Only sometimes I don't know what the obvious one is. Like, what is Jack yelling about on the Titanic? I can't imagine he's yelling about anything other than, whoa, I'm on the Titanic! The ocean! I'm going to America, right? Or was there something else? So, I don't know if I can find the post I'm really talking about, but I think you guys have seen this. Just wanted to bring that up, that sometimes I don't even know what the obvious thing is. So what other news do we have going on? An Indiana University freshman is doing remarkably well after he was trapped in a cave in southern Indiana for nearly 3 days. The Bloomington native Lucas Kvar joined the caving club at Indiana University on a beginner's trip last Sunday to Sullivan Cave, which is about 20 miles south. Blah, blah. Somehow, he managed to get separated from the group, and when he reached the entrance to exit the cage, he realized the gate was padlocked. Kvar said he couldn't get a cell phone signal, so he screamed for hours. He didn't have much food or any water, so he licked moisture from the cave walls to stay hydrated. As soon as I noticed the droplets of water on the cave walls, it seemed pretty obvious what I had to do. It took me a little while. He said, he's looking at the wall, he's like, oh, it's obvious what I have to do. It took me a little while to wrangle my emotions and sort of approach things analytically, sensibly, to come up with a game plan to survive. The Bloomington man whose parents are Indiana University linguists, professors, tried picking the lock with a paperclip to no avail. Dressed in light clothes, hiking boots, and a helmet, Kvar had a plastic bag, 2 energy bar wrappers, 2 empty water bottles, a cell phone, and a wallet. He used the energy bar wrappers to collect moisture and water bottles to collect rainfall and puddled cave water. He also licked the cave's damp walls to quench his thirst. Hunger drove him to consider foraging for cave crickets, although he didn't end up eating any. He says the parents knew something was wrong when he didn't respond to his text messages. After his parents filed a missing person report with the university, a high school friend informed the caving club's president that Kvar was missing. Wow, this is so crazy. So the caving club goes caving, right? There's like 12 of them that go out, right? 11 of them come back and they go, huh. Oh, well, let's lock the gate. 2 club leaders immediately returned to the cave late Tuesday after finding a pile of clothing in a club vehicle that was used as Sunday to travel. So they get home. They all went in the same car. They get back. Everyone takes their stuff. And someone goes, hey, there's some clothes here. Whose is it? Everyone looks around. It's like, not mine, not mine, not mine. Oh, must have been Kevin's. What was his name? Anyway. And like, oh, well, where is he? Well, nobody knows. Okay. Bye, everyone. Thanks for going on the trip. They discovered Kvar uninjured and asleep behind the locked gate. I'm really glad to be alive. It feels like I've been given a second chance, he said. He returned to classes Thursday and has no plans for another spelunking trip. A message posted by the caving club's president on a website said that on a website for Indiana University, said the club's rigorous protocols, quote-unquote, for accounting for club members during cave excursions had failed. Yeah, I don't think there was rigorous protocols. Like, here's some things you could do. Count people. 1. Sign in, sign out. Like, you sign in to the cave, you sign out of the cave. Or if you find a pile of clothes, don't leave without them. Or have, like, a buddy. This means that on the cave trip, this guy had no friends. Nobody even knew who he was. Otherwise, when they got out of the cave, they would have been like, hey, Where's Kavar? My friend, my best friend Kavar, he's not here. I think he's lost, guys. Like, nobody cared. This guy sucks. Everyone hates him. Look at him. He's a complete nerd. His name's Lucas. He's got weird hair and weird glasses, and I think he might even be Asian. Wait, it's hard to tell because he's squinting his eyes. Can you believe it? I don't know what else to say. So, next story, we got an update.
That new interview with Elizabeth Thomas, the teen whose kidnapping made national headlines. Well, she's breaking her silence, revealing what her life is like these days. ABC's Lindsay Janis is here with that story. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Robin. The editor of a local Tennessee newspaper says he was at a fast food restaurant when Elizabeth Thomas just walked in and gave him a brief interview without hesitation. It has been 6 months since Thomas was kidnapped by her former teacher, and this is the first time we've heard from her.
Did they say she walked into a coffee shop and so they started talking to a newspaper editor? Like, did he schedule it or did she just walk in and go, hey, newspaper editor?
Hesitation. It has been 6 months since Thomas was kidnapped by her former teacher, and this is the first time we've heard from her.
This morning, the 15-year-old Tennessee high school student whose kidnapping captivated a nation, seen publicly and speaking out for the first time. Elizabeth Thomas telling the editor of the Columbia Daily Herald she wants to talk, saying, there's much speculation about me. I am a human being. I can answer things fairly. It was March 13th when Thomas disappeared with 50-year-old high school science teacher Tad Cummins.
He planned this for some time before disappearing with Elizabeth.
The pair seen soon after on surveillance cameras in an Oklahoma City Walmart. Their hair colors dramatically changed. Reports surfacing that Cummins had researched online age of consent and how to marry a teen.
She says, I don't regret it. Tennessee teen who sparked nationwide search for driving to California says she does not regret it. I do not regret it, nor do I say that it was the right thing to do. It's an experience I'll have to live with the rest of my life. It's good and bad. It's there. No matter what we do, we'll have to deal with it. The Daily News does not normally identify victims of alleged sex crimes, though the teen has given permission for these writings about her to do so. Elizabeth, so she can give permission. She can give permission for her name to get out, but she can't give permission to get banged? Name, not bang. That doesn't rhyme. Elizabeth told the Daily Herald that she had returned to the Columbia, Tennessee area in July after 3 months of therapy and that she was happy to be back and that people are so accepting. It's not clear whether the teen will testify against her former teacher who took her to the Black Bear Ranch, blah, blah, blah. She described herself as a wife on her Instagram page around the time of her disappearance, with her father saying that she was brainwashed. Thomas explained in her interview how she feels about international attention being focused on the details of her life and the crime she was swept up in. I'm a human being. I can answer things fairly, but people are asking things that are too personal. People are talking to me like they know me. They didn't talk to me before. They didn't even try to know me before. They only liked me since I came back, she said. So she's like, hey, everyone hates me. I'm a nerd, just like Lucas lost in the cave. So I'm going to run off, and now I'm back. And now you guys care about me? Yeah, right. You didn't care about me at all.
Cummins' wife of 31 years filing for divorce.
He's totally betrayed me.
Her family never losing hope.
So now they're just playing old clips of the family going, please come home, blah, blah, blah. So Elizabeth Thomas update. It does sound like she's under therapy. The psychologist says that she is still attached to her kidnapper. She has Stockholm Syndrome, they say. Well, does she, or just does she have I'm a little girl and he's an old man and I don't know what I'm doing syndrome, right? Maybe they'll get married once he's out of jail. We'll find out. She'll be 18 by then, hopefully. Sign language interpreter warned of pizza and a bear monster at Irma briefing. As Hurricane Irma charged toward Florida, officials in a county on the state's west coast held a news conference to inform residents of mandatory evacuations for those at risk. This happens all the time. "We need you to be safe," she said. But residents who were deaf or hard of hearing, the message was quite different. "Pizza," the interpreter appeared to sign, and then "Bear Monster." He immediately drew ire on social media as commenters expressed their disbelief. So here's the...
"Towards Manatee County, which increases our vulnerability to rain, storm surge, and heavy winds. Based on that news, we have issued a mandatory evacuation for the Level A hurricane evacuation zones. Those are generally on our bodies of water."
He's doing the sign language version of... So anyone who's seeing my recommended videos here, don't think that these are weird. This is the screenshot that comes with the music I listen to. It's not... I'm not looking at...
"On the Gulf of Mexico, the islands, low-lying areas, and all mobile homes and manufactured homes."
He's doing the sign language version of, what do I do next? And then his hand just does something random.
"Within the county. We have opened additional shelters, which will be ready and issued to you guys as a list after this conference."
I just realized there's a caption at the bottom that's saying what the guy is signing.
"Low-lying areas and all mobile homes and manufactured
water insurance
homes
settle
within the county.
Gestation will mother.
We have opened additional shelters, which will be ready and issued to you guys as a list."
Here one shelters.
"I have an abundance of folks behind me. We'll go ahead and get started.
Want a lot, PP. Want
like to start.
Start.
Commissioner DeSabatino is our acting Board of County Commissioners chair. Please."
He Thank says you. Commissioner.
And just
he's like, oh, I know that. I know that word. Although it sounds like he's, it looks like he just spells out commissioner using the sign language letters.
"Just hopefully everyone will remain calm.
Jay,
and those that are
hope
in the low-lying
heavy.
Areas and the flood zone in all mobile home parks.
Who low
please
settle.
Please seek higher
Want
ground.
Flood.
Please seek someone you can
nice
double up with for
water
the next couple
for
days.
Flood. Let's skip ahead.
You have all, at this point, a lot of they sleep with.
Child don't
and,
one need
the
bed,
are,
food, water.
At this point, a lot of
so he's just saying random things that are sort of related to supplies you would need for a flood. Now,
help.
A lot of times, these people who are signing things are just spelling the word. If there's not a sign. Is sign language a complete scam? If you're deaf, please write in. How does sign language work? I feel like you can't sign all of the words that exist, and that something that is signed definitely doesn't get the thing across. So I'd like to do an experiment. I say something to an interpreter. That interpreter signs it to a deaf person. That deaf person writes down what the thing was and see how close it is. There's no way that if I say something complex like, hey, to set up a two monitor display, obviously this is the only thing I'm thinking about because I'm looking at two monitors in front of me. To set up a two monitor display, you first have to plug in the VGA cable to your computer, and then you need to set the monitor next to the laptop screen and right click on the desktop and go display settings, and then activate the second monitor, and then you're good. There's no way you can sign that. Nuffin Man says, if I was deaf, how would I know you asked me to comment? That's the joke. Maybe you went deaf after hearing this. I don't know. If you go deaf and then you learn sign language, please write in. We need to do an experiment. Because I believe that sign language is a scam. It is just something to make us feel bad for deaf people. When you see a sign language person in front of someone talking, you go, oh, man, wouldn't it suck to be deaf and I would have to look at this man's hands to know what's going on? We live in the future. This is on TV. There's no reason to be signing. You get a screen, and I get it that there's people at the actual news conference. You get a screen. You get someone typing. That is cheaper and easier than finding a man in a yellow shirt that doesn't know what he's doing to wave his hands around when there's no way you can even get all the information. If I tried to sign to someone, okay, if you're stuck in the flood, grab a broom handle, attach some sort of paddle device to either end. Maybe you could use an old video card or a flipper from your old scuba diving suit. And then use that paddle, sit on a door, and then paddle your way out. There's no way a sign language person would just do this. He would just flap his hands like a paddle. and be like, ah, try to paddle out. There's no way you're going to get all the information. Espresso D says, I'm deaf and listening to the show using an interpreter. What if you hired someone to listen to a podcast and just sign the entire podcast? All right. Vermont man arrested on sexual assault charge. This happens a lot, but this guy was funny looking, so we're bringing him up. Joseph Norco thought he was talking to a child online. This happened locally, too. A Vermont man is behind bars. I love it when they say is behind bars. People are behind bars for using bars of soap. A Vermont man is behind bars after being accused of coming to New Hampshire with the intention of sexually assaulting a young girl. Was it Elizabeth Thomas? Because if not, if it is, she's a person and she can answer this. The Lebanon Police Department has been conducting investigations through social media provider targeting individuals looking for to victimize children. Recently, Lebanon officers engaged in a conversation via social media with Joseph Norco, 51, of St. Johnsbury, Vermont. So the point is, Espresso D says, is that guy's mustache painted on? And no, it is not. He has a very thin mustache that goes in a circle around his chin and then a very small beard. That's like a little square under his lip. And he's completely bald. This guy wants to go to Charlottesville, 100%. The conversation was sexual in nature and led to Norco arriving at a residence in Lebanon where he allegedly intended to meet someone he believed to be a 15-year-old girl. Norco was arrested and charged with attempted felonious sexual assault. Set at $20,000 bail. That is the most amazing facial hair I've ever seen. Yeah, that is why we featured this guy on this audio podcast. So if you are deaf, you can see this by looking at the video version. And that's what the guy's facial hair looks like. I wonder if he sent a picture to the fake girl first. Next story, a heroic French tourist saved a bus of 22 people from plunging down a cliff in the Australian Alps. The 65-year-old man was one of 21 French passengers on board the bus, which was traveling along the Tyrolean Alps when the 76-year-old driver fell ill and collapsed. Yeah, I mean, this happens all the time. You've got an old man, right? He's already done with his regular jobs. He's like, what can I do in my retirement age where I'm getting iller and iller and I'm very sick? Oh, I know. I'll drive a bus full of people. And the city goes, oh, great idea. You're a retiree. You got nothing going on. You can sit in a bus all day and put everyone's life at risk. The bus had driven into a barrier on the road before coming to a stop, and four people were taken to the hospital. Taken to hospital again! There were no fatalities. The passenger had been sitting close to the driver when he collapsed on a road near the city of Schwaz in western Austria. The vehicle then careened through the wooden guardrail, prompting the Frenchman to jump from his seat and wrench the brake. We were a hair's breadth from catastrophe. So did he really do anything? Or did the guardrail stop the bus? Like, did the guardrail stop the bus? And then the guy jumped up and pulled the brake and said, hey, look, I saved us. I saved us. Espresso D says, but it's fine if you're in the driver's seat of USA. Well, yeah, I mean, you can be old and drive your car. It doesn't matter. You can be my grandpa and go to the passenger side and go, all right, that is not the driver's side. Just kidding. All right, bye. Bye, everyone. I'm driving back to Michigan. Remember that? Boy, so, I don't know. That's a story. Now we'll get... Okay, so let me scroll through my notes. We're coming up on... Nearing the end of the video, I suppose. Okay, so what happened this week that was big news? No, you're in the driver's seat of the U.S. Oh, he's saying Trump is old. Okay, yeah. Well, I guess, yeah, Trump is the Kim Jong-un of America, and if he was skinny and looked evil, maybe people would be a lot more scared. I guess people are scared, but mostly because he does weird things. So this week, he was doing a rally. I don't know why he's doing a rally, but he was doing a speech, and he went off script, and he said something about the national anthem. Now, in America, we have this thing, it's called the national anthem. We play it at a lot of sporting events for some reason. And last year, what happened was one of our football players decided, you know what? I'm not going to stand for the national anthem. I'm going to kneel. And they go, why are you kneeling? And he goes, because blacks. And they keep getting shot. So that was his protest, which, fine, I don't care, right? So then Trump goes on this speech, and he says, hey, I don't think that people should be kneeling. In fact, if they're kneeling, they should be fired from the football team, right? They should not be allowed to protest. They should stand, put their hand over their heart, and respect our flag during the national anthem. So in America, yes, we play this national anthem. You hold your hat over your heart, right? Because if you're at a NASCAR event, you take your hat off and you go, I'm putting my hat. The hat counts, apparently. When God looks down and your hand is not over your heart, the hat counts. I guess the hat is an extension of your hand. So God's like, okay, it counts. Kind of like cupping your heart. Please stand and cup your heart with your hat for the national anthem.
I'd love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired.
Wow. Trump's walking around the stage to this cheering, like, oh, yeah, hilarious. Like, he's accepting the applause. He's just walking around the stage in silence with his arms up, going, yep, yep, I'm right, I'm right. People really love this flag. It is like sacred. It is beyond sacred. You disrespect the flag, you get... If I went out downtown and I burned the flag, right? I would get beaten up. I would get beaten up, I'm pretty sure. People would yell. They'd be like, Trump, Trump. Like, with each punch, they yell Trump and punch me in the face. I'm like, but I like Trump too. I want him to do well, but he's kind of like, why is he getting involved in this? Oh, here we go. I mean, I like the USA, too, when it comes to the Olympics. Like, in the Olympics, they're like, oh, yeah, USA, we better win. USA! They're chanting still.
You know, some owner's going to do that. He's going to say, that guy that disrespects our flag, he's fired. And that owner, they don't know it. They don't know. They're friends of mine, many of them. They don't know. They'll be the most popular person for a week. They'll be the most popular person in this country because that's a total disrespect of our heritage. That's a total disrespect of everything that we stand for, okay? Everything that we stand for. And I know we have freedoms and we have freedom of choice and many, many different freedoms. But you know what? It's still totally disrespectful. And, you know, when the NFL ratings are down massively, massively, the NFL ratings are down massively. Now, the number one reason happens to be that they like watching what's happening on, you know, with yours truly.
What? Is he saying that people are not watching football because Trump is on another channel and they have to tune into Trump? Is that what he just said? NFL ratings are down because they want to know what's going on with me.
They like what's happening. This because, you know, today if you hit too hard, right? They hit too hard, 15 yards, throw him out of the game. They had that last week. I watched for a couple of...
He is so funny. He goes off script, and so he's still off script. We're going to finish it up. It's only 30 more seconds because I want to know what he says. But early in his campaigning, he also did this thing where he went off script about Apple when they wouldn't give over the code for that terrorist phone. He's like, we need to... boycott Apple. So basically he's saying, now boycott the NFL because some of the players are doing their protest during the national anthem, which is disrespectful. No mention of, hey, remember when they were rioting and we don't like them rioting? So we said, hey, stop rioting. Just do your protest, but do it peacefully. And they say, okay, how about we kneel during the anthem to bring attention to something we care about? First of all, the media doesn't have to cover the people kneeling. Like, if they didn't want them to get attention, they don't have to give them attention, right? But then they're like, no, you can't protest during the flag either. The flag is sacred. I don't know. Let's see what he says.
A couple of minutes, and two guys just really beautiful tackle. Boom, 15 yards. The referee gets on television. His wife is sitting at home. She's so proud of him.
What? He's making stuff up about the ref's wife. This is hilarious.
They're ruining the game.
Hey, honey, did you just see me throw that flag? See my forearm muscle throw that thing?
Right? They're ruining the game. Hey, look, that's what they want to do. They want to hit, okay? They want to hit, but it is hurting the game.
Whoa, that was loud. All right, so he says that, okay, and then the internet goes insane. They're like, Trump just called everyone who kneels for the flag an SOB, right? And that was completely unacceptable, apparently. So now, this weekend, what happened? Every single team, quote-unquote, demonstrated in some way. The stream is skipping a bit. Blah, blah, blah. Well, let's see. I don't freaking know. Oh, wow. Stream is skipping a bit. So anyway, they say every single team is going to demonstrate in some way. So some of them don't even come out for the national anthem. Some of them kneel during the national anthem. Some of them stand and like lock arms during the national anthem. And everyone's like, everyone's covering this. And like, what are you guys doing? I don't even get it anymore. And they're like, we're showing unity by locking arms. And I go, but how does that, I mean, I guess it's showing unity for your team, but how does that have anything to do with what Trump said? So we're at a crossroads because it's very popular to be pro-flag and pro-anthem, and it's very popular to be anti-Trump. So when Trump says, be pro-flag, don't be anti-flag, people go, oh, crap. Trump said don't be anti-flag, but it's unpopular to be anti-flag. I don't know. I guess it's more popular to be anti-Trump than to not be anti-flag. So people go, okay, we're going to be anti-Trump. We're going to make a demonstration against Trump saying that stupid thing and lock arms or kneel during the anthem or something. So now it's become a whole thing, right? Athletics' Bruce Maxwell becomes the first Major League Baseball player to kneel for the national anthem. He's not even black. Well, I guess he's another thing other than normal. Oakland A's catcher Bruce Maxwell became the first Major League Baseball player to kneel for the national anthem. In open protest ahead of Oakland's home game, Maxwell, who is African-American and comes from a military family, chose to kneel with his hand on his heart facing the flag in solidarity with the NFL players who continue to protest racism and inequality. So the protest is about saying, oh, stop shooting blacks. We're going to kneel to bring more attention to this matter. And then the people who are anti the kneeling go, why do you keep kneeling? Our soldiers died for you. You have to respect the flag, respect the country. People get super duper offended when you don't respect the country. And I don't know where it comes from. I think it comes from, like, I used to be like this a little bit more. I think it comes from like being scared, right? If we're not a united country, how are we going to be when the war breaks out? How are we going to be when the zombies come? How can we be divided so much against ourselves? We need to be together. We need to be strong, and everyone should agree with me, and everyone should worship the flag, and everyone should stand for it and respect it, blah, 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 because of how many great things this flag and this country has done for you. You should respect the cloth and the flag, right? Because that's how I feel, so everyone should have to. Oh, boy. Major League Baseball has a long-standing tradition of honoring our nation prior to the start of our games. We also respect that each of our players is an individual with his own backgrounds, perspectives, and opinions. Now, that is funny, because baseball is full of people who are not American citizens, I'm pretty sure. Like, it's a very Spanish style of game. We believe that our game will continue to bring our fans, their communities, and our players together. Earlier Saturday, Maxwell posted on Twitter following a series of comments from President Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. So then Trump goes on this rampage on Twitter. I'm only going to read a couple of them, but he just goes to Twitter and he just starts talking about football. Roger Goodell of NFL just put out a statement trying to justify the total disrespect certain players show to our country. Tell them to stand. If NFL fans refuse to go to games until players stop respecting our flag and country, they will see change take place fast. Fire or suspend. NFL attendance and ratings are way down. Boring games, yes, but many stay away because they love our country. League should back U.S. Great solidarity for our national anthem and for our country. Standing with locked arms is good. Kneeling is not acceptable. Bad ratings. So that's what Trump says. So then the Monday night game comes, and the Cowboys are playing in Texas. Sorry, they're not playing in Texas, but the Cowboys are owned by Jerry Jones, and he's known to be very pro-flag and anti this demonstration a little bit. So the question is, what will Jerry Jones and the Cowboys do? So after the game, the headline comes out. Jerry Jones and Cowboys kneel before anthem. Right? That's the big headline with a picture of Jerry Jones and the Cowboys kneeling. Now, to a layman, you look at that picture and that headline and you go, oh, they kneeled for the entire anthem? No. The headline was, Jerry Jones and Cowboys kneel before anthem. And then the missing second headline that should read is, and then they stood up and the anthem was played. So what they did was all of the Cowboys and the Jerry Jones owner stood in a line, locked arms, and kneeled on the field. Like, there was no... There was nothing going on during that. That's just what they did. It's like similar to how everyone kneels in a circle before a game and prays to the Lord Jesus and goes, Lord, please protect us. Do not let any of us get concussed or paralyzed. Amen. They're kneeling. And that was a kneeling before the anthem. But that's not reported on. It's just a line of people kneeled. And then it's like, oh my God, they kneeled. Take pictures. And actually, there's video of Jerry Jones running from the line, grabbing a photographer and going, we're about to kneel. Come on. And then he runs back. I don't get it. Why are we even doing this at a game, right? Just play the game. This is our gladiators. NFL football is the closest we have to the old-style gladiators. And just play it. Let us yell at the game. And I don't know. I don't know why we've got to be all political. So that's what's happened, though. It is big news. Final story, and this is a local one. And by local, I mean I can see it from my house. Pretty much. I can't really see it. It is 0.4 miles away. I know that because I run.
A man from Tennessee has moved to New Hampshire to open the state's first full-time mosque.
That's right. Right now, work is underway on this building, and our Catherine Underwood joins us live in Keene with the story. Catherine.
Well, Latoya and Joy, this brick building behind me will become that mosque. And what's really interesting here is that inside, you'll find volunteers.
The video won't pause.
All different religious backgrounds.
It won't pause.
Coming together to make this happen.
Well, I don't know what to do. Okay. New Hampshire, going to open its first mosque. This man's name is Will Coley.
A man from Tennessee.
And he has been gifted this house by another man named Ian Freeman. He's been gifted a brick building that was full of cats and trash and fleas and carpenter ants. And it is literally that way. 0.4. Oh, shizzle. Now you can use that information to triangulate my location. Well, anyway, it's that way under a mile, right? I can run there easily. If I bike there, I'd be there in 2 minutes. And if you look at the video, it is just a brick building that's gross, and they're saying, here, it's going to be a mosque. There's literally trash cans outside.
Toya, and
I think that's an acetone can or like a paint thinner can.
Joy, this brick building behind me will become that mosque.
They sent NBC Boston down the street to report on something that doesn't exist. This is like me saying, hey, guys, this house going to be the biggest gay sex club next week. I've done no work to make it that. I haven't installed any new showers. I haven't installed any new swings, any chains. I painted one room blue and I said, hey, I bet you this could become the next big thing. This is going to be a casino, actually, next week. Come report. I promise you, this will be a casino. I'm going to be breaking all the laws. I'm actually going to get one of those. I'm going to go to Puke's house. I'm going to get that roulette wheel that Joe gave us. And that's going to be roulette, right? I'm going to need one of those $5 mats. with the numbers on it. But other than that, that's going to be roulette. Craps will be played in the bathroom. And we got poker going. I'm going to run a full casino out of this house.
Really interesting.
Send NBC Boston.
Thing here is that inside, you'll find volunteers from all different religious backgrounds just coming together to make this happen.
Wow, she took that line directly from Ian. Ian has said, hey, Christians and atheists and other people have come together to help this Muslim man paint his house. This is disgusting. Look at this. Does not look like a mosque. This is nothing. This is a house. This is a literal house. I'm losing my brain.
Come on in.
It's a proud moment for Imam Will Coley.
This will
Imam.
Be the men's area for the prayer space.
He's been studying religion for decades and converted to Islam about 10 years ago.
Our work has always been about bringing people together.
I wondered when he became a Muslim. Because he did not look like he grew up Muslim. He's a full-on white man. So he converted to Muslim 10 years ago. Okay, this is good info. When did he meet his wife? That is the question. Because I have a theory about this Will Coley character.
Together.
So when a local interfaith church offered to donate this house in Keene to...
The local interfaith church, otherwise known as the Shire Free Church, otherwise known as Let's Bake a Church So We Can Stop Paying Property Taxes. My name is Ian and Daryl W. Perry.
Local interfaith church offered to donate this house in Keene to open a mosque. Coley decided to pick up his wife and five children and move from Tennessee.
I saw the opportunity to do a service that would bring this community closer together, and I cannot walk away from that.
It'll become New Hampshire's first full-time mosque, although Coley's plans include so much more.
So the whole video so far is him gesturing towards certain parts of the house, going, this will be less shitty, this will be less shitty, and people will be able to pray.
The space is here. It's available. Please come.
He says the doors will be open as a community center to anyone and everyone.
He's one of these guys. He's got a lot of big ideas and no action. Well, he's painted a wall, okay? So he's getting there. But these people, they come in and they go, here is our project. We're going to do all of these things. And it's being reported on like it's happened. No, it's just, I can type this up too. I can do a PowerPoint in 5 minutes.
Regardless of their religion.
There's an Orthodox Jewish community of about a dozen. Saturday, the building's all yours.
Oh, yeah. The Jews are really going to want to go to your rundown brick old house and be like, oh, thanks for letting us hang out in your... Why wouldn't the Jews just go to the Jew temple? I don't know what an Orthodox is. Is that the one with the big beards?
And the mosque is literally being built on that same premise. Christopher Wade is an atheist doing his part to help. And the shop owner next door is even pitching in.
I was raised in the Episcopal Church.
Now, the shop owner next door works in a shop also owned by Ian. It's not like there's a guy next door. It's like, oh, wow, a mosque is opening up next to the shop that I've put my entire life savings in to running this little thrift store. And I'm running it in a small town. And I just hope I don't get stuck up at night. An old man, I'm Asian, and I come in and I make Slurpees all day, 16 hours a day. No, this is just a guy who runs, I mean, for sure, yes, he's put work into his shop, right? But it's not like, hey, here's a townie, and he agrees with the Muslim. He's already on the side of the Muslims. He's already on the side of the...
Proud that his community is sending a powerful message to anyone who believes religion is a barrier.
This is a way of tearing down some boundaries that some people may perceive exist.
We want people to look at Keene and be like, we want to model what we do in our town off what they're doing there.
So Coley tells us this front part of the house will also be a dedicated warming center for the homeless during the cold months.
Of course it will. Here's a room. What can we do? Something. And then they'll report on it.
He's hopeful the mosque will be up and running and open for worship by November. Reporting live from Keene, Catherine Underwood, NBC.
Well, whatever. They say, yeah, if you're homeless, come stop in here. Which, by the way, this house is on a highway. Now, I'm not saying that the homeless don't come up here, because they certainly do. But I guess it is friendly that it's like halfway between the police station or downtown and the jail. So the homeless walking back to their halfway house, I guess they're not homeless if they live at the halfway house. But anyway, we'll have a little warming shelter to pick up some tea. Look at that air conditioner sitting in there. This is insane. Espresso D says, does Ian own everything in Keene? Question mark. No, he owns his house, as far as I know. And well, actually, technically, legally, Ian owns nothing. Legally, the church owns it, of which Ian is a main member of the church board. I don't know. If you look up the property record, the Shire Free Church, I'm pretty sure, owns the property. Ian does not have his name on it. So they've succeeded in whatever they're trying to do. As far as that's concerned, so he owns that, and then he owns this property down the street that includes the shop, it includes this house, and it includes a little lot where there's an Asian lady making sushi or whatever. Or I don't know what she makes. I've never stopped there. But she owns a little food trailer. Well, anyway, hey, NBC, my house is going to be a casino. I've already ordered the poker table. It is coming. I'm just going to need the craps table, and I'm going to go, yeah. All right, this has been News with Nick. Watch out for updates on the mosque, I suppose. I mean, I'm thinking of actually going there and volunteering. I'm not a dick, right? I would not go there and go, oh, my God, look at this. This is so stupid. I would legit put in an hour and a half, 2.5 hours painting or scraping just to get in there and be like take a good look. I will put in the labor to do the research for you people. That's how much I care about reporting on the mosque. All right, this has been News with Nick. Thanks for coming out. It is 7:15, so I do need to get moving. Hopefully this was an okay show. I don't know. A little slow on the news style. What have we learned? Don't kneel for the flag. Don't get beaten up by a Trump supporter. And if you're going to go to a cave, like, make sure that you're not hated. Make sure that you're not hated by everyone. I bet that kid that got locked in the cage sat in the back of the van and went, hello? I'm shy. You know why I think that? Because that's what I would do if I were part of a club. And it is what I do when I'm part of a running club. I just sit in the bar going, I'm on my phone. Hopefully nobody talks to me. All right. Bye.